Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
For $5 a month, you can actually see the Thin Green Line interviews and other video content on Patreon.com. Just search the Thin Green Line podcast on Patreon.com. That's Patreon.com, and feel like you're part of the conversation. Join us.
Well, this one, guys, is just fun, Wayne, and I know I'm kind of preaching to the choir here, but part two of Cody Stamann here on our Thin Green Line podcast, and what an awesome conversation this was. You know, it went so long that we had to go into a part two. That's only happened one other time with Barry Kirch, our Shinedown drummer buddy. But man, Cody brought so much more to the table in this conversation than being a champion MMA fighter in the UFC circuit, right?
No doubt.
The depth of what his conservation background is. And I think in part two, especially when we talk about, without giving it all away, when we talk about dealing with people that don't share your same views, right? And we have so much polarization in the country right now, like we've been dealing with, and you know, all this pandemic panic and everything going on through COVID. And something that Cody brought to light that we got to share our experiences with him, he actually catalyzed something in you and I, is how much we need to just listen to everybody and let everybody have their voice and have an opinion. Everybody has, you know, a legitimate perception of what they perceive is going on in their frame of reference, whether it be political or not. And we don't all have to agree, but we should agree to disagree at least, you know, and we should agree that we need to get along and foster more unification versus polarization. And, you know, and you would not expect on a stereotype to see an MMA fighter being very tolerant of other people's different views, right? And he is actually, as he puts out in the story, in his story, that he's been stereotyped before. You know, they think he's a thug because he's this champion fighter when he's anything but. You know, an amazing young man, heart of gold, a true patriot, a gentleman, you know, and basically a sheepdog, a protector, not an aggressor out there. And that's what I thought was one of the most beautiful parts, without giving it away, all the depth we're going to talk about in the second part of this, as well as everything else Cody's about as a fighter and a conservationist, man. What a great conversation.
No, it certainly was. It was great to get in depth with Cody to find out all those things, because I don't think a lot of people do, or they take the time. I mean, when we have our normal conversations with people, sometimes we don't get the time to get to know them. But I think communication is the key to all of this. If we have that conversation and we can start to relate on some level, we're better off as a person. And this is, without actually sitting down with Cody, you guys, this is getting to know Cody. And it's pretty awesome to have that interaction. I was wicked excited. And it was just wicked excited to know at what level that these guys are fighting at, and that a mental game is almost as important as the physical game. And to have that mental state, to have that calm before the storm, I found that very reflective. And I remember going into a wrestling match, having that same calm before the storm, focusing. And now I watch these fights in a whole different way, John. I look at these guys and I watch their mental state, just like we talked with Cody about. And I'm trying to get in their head now. What's he thinking about? Is he focused? Is he by picking these winners? It's been interesting for me to kind of look at that now that he's brought that into it, and that mental game and how important that is. And you know, certainly in every aspect that we do, you know, no matter what, before we go into the podcast, we get into a mental game. We start to process it. We start to think of it. So we're in the game. Same with Cody. And the same thing everybody should be doing before you get in the game, start getting your head in the game. And I think that's a good lesson learned from young people to old people. Yeah, I think it was a dynamic conversation. And you got a lot of good stuff going on, John. You got to share some of this new exciting stuff, because I'm excited for you. I'm excited to see you going on. I know you got a new hat on. If you guys are watching on Patreon, John's got a new hat here. He's going to be wearing a new hat. So that's wicked cool to share. Wicked exciting, just as much as Cody Stamann, the UFC fighter. I'm as much excited what you're going on, and you're going fast, man.
Yeah, you know, Wayne, I guess overall you and I wear a lot of different hats, right? To you know, no pun intended, but we really do. And part of what I'm doing with Monster Energy and Can-Am and Kuyu and all of these sponsors I'm going to talk about in a minute really come to the reason we wear all these hats, and I think I'm speaking for both of us here, is we're trying to bring the Thin Green Line message of conservation, of public safety, of outdoor enjoyment, you know, for the good of the nation, whether you hunt or fish or not, but just preserving our wildlands, waterways, and wildlife out there, you know, for all good reasons, right? The cool thing about Thin Green Line podcast is we go outside of the comfort zone with traditional conservationists. You know, we don't just talk to hunters. We don't just talk to anglers. We don't just talk to game wardens. We talk to people outside you're in my comfort zone that we've grown up and they've been our closest allies and our closest friends and family. And now, you know, we're starting to build bridges and doing projects with other areas. MMA fighters like Cody, you know, rock and roll drummers that are, you know, conservationist and Second Amendment aficionados and field to table, you know, connoisseurs as well in the, you know, rock and roll professional world. You know, my history of desert racing in and around my career as a game warden has now been kind of blown up in teaming up with the Monster Energy side-by-side professional race team and getting in with those guys to bring the whole Thin Green Line conservation element of what we all stand for and what they stand for together and network it in the off-road racing community. You just don't see that, but we have millions and millions of fans for off-road racing and racers and high dollar teams and corporate sponsors like Monster Energy, like Can-Am, like Kuyu Ultralight Hunting that's been behind me since 2014 and that supports conservation officers all over the country. Kuyu's one of those companies that with their support, I'm able to get back and go race again all over you know, the Southwest, to the Baja circuit, all those things that I just love to do that I really didn't do a lot of toward the end of my career because the MET program and building that special operations team was a 24/7 all encompassed last 6 years of your career, put everything on hold. And I'll tell you, I missed racing. I missed being in my desert racing community because they are great people. And now we're bringing the Thin Green Line to desert racing. We're supporting, you know, everything from orphanages that my team has supported on the smaller scale way back since 2006. And we're just having a lot of fun bringing everybody together to do this and push that Thin Green Line message even further. So stay tuned, everybody. There's going to be some updates as I get more and more immersed. I can't give away the farm yet, but I'll have a lot more details to share as we go along. But Wayne, to put it bluntly, We're going, it's high speed, low drag with this team. This team won the SCORE championship last year in Baja, which is the gladiator sport of all off-road desert racing. Those are the gladiator races, is the Baja circuit. One just to finish, but two to be a champion in the professional class. That's amazing. And now there's a whole lot of pressure to follow that up. And you can imagine everybody on our heels wanting to, you know, take a swap at that. And that's the fun part of it, you know, but the off-road racing community, brother, is just like, you know, the Thin Green Line of game wardens. We compete really hard against each other, but ultimately we're out there for the same reasons, looking after each other, loving what we do and just loving the sport and wanting to protect it and keep OHV thriving under the Thin Green Line.
Yeah, and that Monster Energy, they have three Thin Green Lines I see when I see on that hat. That's what I see. When I see Monster Energy, I'm like, that's three Thin Green Lines there. So hopefully we'll all get into that family. And you're right, we bring a diversity into this podcast, whether it's Warden's Watch or the Thin Green Line. We, you know, East Coast, West Coast, desert racing. I'm excited for you, and I'm excited to learn. I'm excited to see this as an outsider because it's something that I'm very unfamiliar with and you're very familiar with, and you're introducing me into it. And I've already had some people reach out to me and say, geez, John's on the Monster Energy Can-Am team. That is awesome. On the East Coast, which is it's dynamic. It's just really interesting, and I'm really appreciative. But we certainly bring different things to this, and I think that's what makes it exciting. It makes it interesting. And, you're going to be very successful, as you have been in the past. Yeah, your past endeavors have certainly set up you for your future. So that's great.
Well, and you said, you know, Wayne, it's funny you mentioned that because, you know, you talk about mental preparation and you talk about getting in your bubble and getting in your head, getting in your zone. And it's the same way in racing. I can honestly say that I ran my first race with Brad Howe, our number two driver for the Monster Energy team, and learning to co-drive and navigate in a side-by-side rather than driving a quad and racing a quad myself. I mean, I'm kind of drinking through a fire hose right now.
Yes.
Learning GPS navigation and going at speeds that, you know, we don't normally, that I'm not used to going as a long endurance rider. But I'll tell you, man, what a blast to learn a new way of racing. See the technology that's evolved since I stopped racing quads, you know, on the Baja circuit back in 2013 when we started Met, and just learn from the best. I'm really grateful to my teammates like Brad and Matt and Tim and all the different people that are helping make this possible. But something we're bringing to that element is, you know, my Thin Green Line film series for Recoil TV. We're going to be doing a pretty epic film next year, our third film. We have one more conservation hunting related one here in October that's going to happen on a trophy elk hunt. And I'll have details on that here more soon, but next year we immerse on the big race. We immerse on what's kind of happening in this race team, what goes into the mental preparation, the physical preparation, the mechanics. And I can honestly say what thrills me more than anything is being on a team that's so tightly woven and they work so diligently and prepare for so long all year to compete at the highest level. They run like a Met team. They run like a tier one special operations unit, whether it be a SEAL team or what I was used to with my Met teammates. And quite honestly, I haven't been to that level of intensity and, you know, just everybody in it for each other since retiring from the Met unit. So this is a whole, you know, this goes beyond racing for me. This goes deeper. And it goes deeper for these team guys that are family. And just to be prepared and equipped and everything having to go wrong. And then racing's chaotic, man. It's like the calm in the center of the storm if you're not crashing or breaking down at this level. So it's just like the term we used to use on the Met team and that you would read about in the book, fill and flow. If you can't fill and flow in a race because plan A, B, and C may not work out, you might have to have a plan, you know, Q, S, X, Y, or Z and be able to improvise, overcome, and adapt just to get to the finish line. Man, I love that intensity. That is pressure in the best way. Just like I was back doing ops with the boys. And that's what's kind of cool about this. And we're going to capture that in a film next year, a Thin Green Line film for Recoil TV and for Amazon and for our YouTube channels. That's really going to capture what this race team is about, specifically how it affects our Thin Green Line and promotes it. And I feel very blessed and excited. And I'm grateful that you and our listeners and our viewers are part of this because it's a journey we're going to share. And, you know, we're all on the team together, whether you're racing or not.
Certainly well said. So we're going to go right into Cody Stamann, Thin Green Line episode part two. I hope you enjoyed the first part as much as I did, just to get inside that UFC fighter, to learn that personal side, to learn that outdoor side. It's certainly dynamic. Enjoy. I was getting reports of graffiti on the trails, you know, going hiking. They'd find a rock and spray graffiti. And, you know, I was happy everybody was getting up and experiencing the outdoors, but then they were bringing their culture with them, which was very disappointing that they couldn't look at that rock as a rock and how beautiful it was that they had to spray it with spray paint and so out of place. And, we need more people like you, you know, having that proud moment saying, I can't believe anybody ran across some spray and graffiti. They would have said something. I would hope. I would pray.
It's just a weird generation, and I'm honestly part of it. Part of that, and that really they don't respect the outdoors. They don't understand the outdoors. Mm. They're not outdoorsmen. Maybe, you know, it's a family thing. It's something that they never did. But I find more and more people, you know, like maybe it's because of COVID and everyone got locked up. You know, for that long period of time, they're like, dude, I need to get out of my house. I need to get out of the city.
Right.
Get out of this like mundane schedule that I've been on. And honestly, more people have like contacted me like, hey man, next time you're going to the lake to go camping or whatever, like awesome. I want to go, you know, I want to experience that, you know, next time you're going to go hunting, I'd like to just tag along and see what it's like. And like duck hunting, you know, I think maybe I've actually turned people off to it because like, I'm a pretty primitive guy. Like I don't go out there with, you know, like some guys go out, you know, like when they go ice fishing, they have a shanty and they're drinking.
Yeah, they got the whole camp. Yeah.
Stuff. Like I go out there with absolutely the essentials that I need. I got water. I don't have any food. I don't have snacks. I took one guy out and I just about killed him. Like, I killed him out there. I mean, the hike there was
Here's brutal. Your 80-pound pack. We're going to hike 5 miles into my duck spot. And, yeah, sounds like a workout to me,
Cody. You're going
to
put out decoys for me.
Yeah.
And you're going to train him to retrieve ducks too, aren't you?
Yeah. Really good for that. But kill the mic there. He steps, he's got boots on. He steps over his boots, so his feet are freezing. And it was frigid cold this morning. I mean, I was cold, and I have a lot of really nice hunting gear. And I was cold, and I was looking over at him, and he's the first 2 hours of the hunt, we're just sitting there. We're not seeing anything, nothing. And nothing's coming near us. And so his first hunting experience was absolutely brutal. But we ended up getting in some ducks later on in the day, and I don't know if it's rewarding for him. I don't know if he's going to do it again, but we'll see. I mean, hunting's hard. Hunting's really, really hard, and you got to be—you've really got to enjoy it if you're willing to, you know, put yourself through all that to do it. And that's the thing that people don't understand. It's like they think that you just go out, like I just like step out of my truck and I got my gun in my hand.
Damn, it's done. Yeah,
yeah. I know. I walk out,
the trigger, back the truck up to it, load it. Yeah.
There's axes everywhere, and I don't, you know what I mean? They don't understand that there's a whole process to it, and you really got to know what you're doing if you're going to be successful. And even if you know what you're doing, and you do everything right or everything that you know to do, you might still not be successful. You might come home empty-handed, and it happens more times than I like to admit. Obviously, those stories never make Instagram, but
right.
Yeah, you're a hunter, you know that. You know, you sit in a tree stand for 8 hours, you don't see a single deer, and you're like, dude, I did everything right. What's going on? It's like, dude, they're wild animals. You can't really predict exactly where they're going to be. You can collect some data and try to feel out the same way in a fight. You know what I mean? You know, all you're doing is you're collecting data and hoping that, you know, the things that you want to happen are going to happen. But like, there's no guarantee in that. It's not, you know, it's not set in stone. I go sit here and, you know, kill a monster buck. It's like, you got to put some work in, and you know, that's probably what deters most people from hunting, is when they actually realize how hard it is to do it.
Yeah, you got to learn your animal both in the rink and in the wild. So you're spending some time studying that opponent, just like you would that white-tailed deer, like that duck, to know how it's going to act. And then there's always that X factor that it doesn't do what you want it to do, or you don't see what it's doing. But we are creatures of habit, and you must watch a lot of fight video of people you're going to come up and fight to pick out those habits and pick out your best, you know, how you're going to fight that fight.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's basically, I mean, for me, I'm very tactical about it. Like I have a loose game plan. There's always a way I see things going, you know, based on film, based on, you know, my tendencies, their tendencies. And there's things that I know that I have to do to be successful. You know what I mean? Like whether it's going forward, whether it's getting the takedown, whether it's, you know, having my hands in the right place, moving my feet, there's a million things that go into it. And, you know, like I said, you're just trying to give yourself the absolute best possible chance of, you know, being at the right place at the right time and making the right decision. And that's basically, you know, the approach that you have to have as an athlete, because everyone is so good at this level. I mean, you're not getting, this is the cream of the crop in the UFC at the, you know, in the rankings, in the top 15, you're not talking about, you know, I think I fought like maybe one or two guys from the US. But I mean, I'm fighting guys from China. I'm fighting guys from Russia. I'm fighting guys from Brazil. I'm not fighting, you know, I'm not fighting in my backyard anymore. I'm fighting.
Right. You're going global.
Talking about, you know, these guys, you know, some of them are the only person in their country to make it to this level. Like they're 1 in 2 billion. He was the only Chinese guy at the time that was ranked. Like he was the only one in all of China that was ranked in the UFC. So, you know, he's essentially the best guy representing a country, you know, and like, that's the guy you have to beat. And that is different than, you know, fighting Michigan. You know what I mean? You're talking about, you know, the most elite guys, and like, as much as you're studying them, they're studying you, and they know your tendencies. They know, they have a pretty good idea what you're going to do. So you got to bring something else to the table every fight, you know? So there's so much that goes into being an athlete, and it's really crazy. I mean, just the fact that you're locking yourself in a cage with a guy that, you know, can hurt you a million different ways. You add everything else into it. And it's a really, really crazy life, but you know, I absolutely love it, because, you know, there's no shortage of, you know, challenges and ups and downs. And let's just say it's exciting all the time. You know, it really is. I've never been bored as an athlete. I've never been bored as a, as a, as a fighter. I mean, there's not really a whole lot of lull moments. You know, there's always something happening. Absolutely crazy sport.
That's why I like watching.
Yeah, I know. I talked to John Bartolo about the next visitor show we do in Vegas. I got to time it around one of your fights, man, and get you some support and see in the arena. It's such a big level with all the preparation you put in, and you know, given our backgrounds and having a team and all the prep that goes into that, I just respect the heck out of the level of dedication, preparation, and commitment and focus without distractions that you have to put in to be a fighter at this level and be successful. It's amazing. But consider this, Wayne and I talked a little bit, we kind of hinted at this. If you get to the point where you retire some many years down the road at the top of your game, hey man, I just mentored a 51-year-old cadet that just started our Fish and Wildlife Academy in California last week. It was his third career. He's totally retired from everything else. And he goes, I'm terrified, man. I'm the oldest cadet ever in the Fish and Game Academy that I've ever heard of. What do you think? And I told him, our current chief of patrol right now started at 45 after being a very successful businessman to live the dream. So I'm not hitting you hard on this, man, but consider that in retirement. If you need something to do because you're a little bit bored, come join us. Join the Thin Green Line. We'd love to have you.
I think it could happen. I really do. I mean, it's something I'm passionate about, you know, and I tend to be really good at things I'm passionate about and
oh, yeah.
not very good at anything else. So it might be in the cards for me. It'd be a cool job. Cause I mean, I respect what you guys do so much. I mean, like I said, there should be 8 times, 9 times, 10 times as many of you, but you know, the realities of it is, I don't know if it's a funding issue or if there's just not that many people that want to do it, but I'd love to join the good guys and try to make a difference.
Yeah. And thanks a lot for sharing that proud moment with us. Cause that made me very proud and inspired me. And I'm sure it's going to inspire other hunters to do the right thing and have that proud moment just like you did.
Yeah.
I hope so. I hope so, because it's an uphill battle. It's an uphill battle. And in the book, it was amazing to me. Like I guess I just never saw things in that light. I never really saw those things from a conservation standpoint. You know, it was very eye opening. You know, it's crazy. And I think, like I said, that's something that everyone can get behind. Yes. You know what I mean? Whether you're pro marijuana, you're anti marijuana. Like I said, everybody can get behind protecting wildlife. You know what I mean? Hey, hunters. Okay. Do you love the outdoors? Well, no, I don't ever go outdoors. Well, do you like being able to go outside? Do you like having clean water? Yeah. I'm like, okay, well, then here's what we're doing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I can get behind that. That's just it's a different way of looking at it, you know, because I mean, kind of out of sight, out of mind, you know, people don't, you know, it's hard to get behind a cause that you don't think relates to you. You don't think affects you. And to know that, you know, it affects you. I mean, it definitely opened my eyes to it. And I think it could, you know, for a million other people, you know, because I have a 21-year-old sister who's going to school at Michigan. You know, we were talking about, you know, politics and, you know, all these things. And like, one of their big things was like the environment. Like the kids nowadays, like they're a little bit like hipster and they want to seem like they really, really care about the environment. And then I'd hit them with some cold, hard, you know, facts. And, you know, these young girls, they're looking at me like I'm crazy. And I'm like, the conservation efforts that hunters and other people put into, you know, protecting wildlife is like, it surpasses anything that you guys can do by writing like a tweet on Instagram or whatever it is. I mean, you sit behind your computer and you think that like by saying something, it's making this huge difference, but, you guys are just kind of reiterating that, hey, we have a problem. It's like, well, if you want to do something, you have to take action, right? You can't just kind of sit on your couch and be like, well, you know, I did my part and I let people know that, you know, there's something bad happening here. It's like, no, I mean, you need to get the right people involved and really make more of a conscious effort to make a change, not just, you know, sit here and complain about the problem, because that's kind of the easy thing to do that everyone's kind of gotten into doing. Well, you know, I don't like this person. I'm going to let them know on social media. oh, I don't like that this is happening. I'm going to let everybody know about it on social media. Like, it's good to bring awareness to that. But if, you know, a million people bring awareness to something and nobody does anything, like no one did anything, you know, and that's just, that's like the generation. It's so easy to just, you know, complain about this, complain about that. This isn't right. This isn't right. It's like, well, who is actually making the effort to step up and make a change, you know, and not many people are, not many people are actually willing to go that extra mile and make the change and, you know, do the things that, that need to be done to right a wrong. And it's just, it's wild to me. It's wild to me that, that that's like the next generation of people, because man, we're going to have a lot of complaints, but we're not going to have a lot of action unless something changes.
Yeah. And you hit it on the head, brother. All of us here on this conversation, we're men of action. We always have been. And it's so frustrating and so angering to see people complain and spin their wheels and not, you know, not get out there, rock and roll and get busy. Don't get in the ring. It's just, yeah. Some of us, everyone, more and more have to step up. But, you know, and you mentioned something when we talk about the water, whether you're for cannabis, against cannabis. And one thing we always push is the whole hidden war thing isn't an anti-cannabis message at all. I mean, we have legitimate cannabis regulation in California. We do in Nevada. We do in many states. It's an anti-environmental crime message, like you said. And so it's really cool to see. We've seen the legitimate cannabis industry that typically was not so favorable to dealing with law enforcement all of a sudden going, like, you know, when you notice the water damage, they're like, holy crap, we didn't even realize that. We didn't know the depths the cartels had. We're trying to do it right. We love our environment. We, you know, we don't use pesticides. We don't divert water. We don't put byproducts in there. So more of a unifying thing on the environment, you know, and that's just one example of many different environmental approaches we take to other poaching crimes and try not to alienate anybody that's anti-hunting, because you're right. You're not going to convince everybody. They're not going to see the joy in it. They definitely don't want to maybe get their butts kicked on a hardcore duck hunt or a whitetail hunt you or I or Wayne would take them on, but they're going to say, hey, you're right. I don't want to see poison water and I'm a cannabis user, or I hate cannabis. I'm totally against it, but I want to stop the environmental thing. I think it's that, that unified message that affects everybody, as you said, that is so freaking critical. I mean, we talk about messages a little bit. I got to ask you one question. You have a very subtle tattoo up on the chest, Moan Labe. And yep. When I saw that in one of your fight pictures, it's so subtle, but it means so much. And it means so much to all of us on this conversation and really what it stands for from the, you know, from the standpoint of America and what we stand for in our founding fathers. Talk about the significance of that and why you placed that tattoo in that place. It's kind of a special point.
So, I mean, obviously, you know, it's kind of how I live my life, essentially, you know, and you know, the story, you know, King Leonidas standing up against basically tyranny. He was going to let people, you know, come and enslave his people. And you know, he wasn't going to let somebody just come and like walk all over him like that, that concept, you know what I mean? That like, we all have to stand up and fight for something, you know what I mean? Like something that you believe in. Maybe it's not like a physical fight, but, you know, you got to stand up for your values, for the morals, things that, you know, are right. And, you know, being from Sparta, Michigan, born and raised, it just resonated with me on a million different levels. You know, I have it, my brother has it, you know, it's just, it's something that I really live my life by, you know, and it's a super, super powerful message, probably one of the most powerful messages I've ever heard. And, you know, throughout history, and it just means, you know, you stand up for what is yours and what you know is right. And, like I said, that's how I try to live my life.
I love it. And not everybody, you know, lives to that ideal and stands up for what is right. And it means a lot, you know, and obviously it transcends into the Second Amendment too, which we see so much. And obviously we're a little under siege on that. We don't try to get overly political, but all these things that hunters and conservationists that we thrive on is that legal and legitimate, you know, firearms ownership and ethical and legal and rational use of those firearms and everything else. So yeah, I don't have it on my body, but I have it printed somewhere, other places around my shop. But it was really cool to see.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like I said, and right now we are, you know, not to get political, but we are kind of in a fight, you know, and yeah. It's going to take a lot of strong men to stand up, you know, together and, you know, fight for the things that are right and that are, you know, lawfully ours.
Yeah. And you're certainly one of those guys at the level you're competing in. I mean, you have such a good influence as a great role model, and we like to see that. And what Wayne and I do, and you know what our friend John Barlow's doing with educating on 2A stuff, super critical. Kudos to him. A little bit a sad subject, and certainly not to belabor it if you don't want to go there, but you lost a very special member of your family less than a year ago. I was heartbroken to hear that when I got to know of you, and John and I talked a lot about that. You pushed through during a fight, with a fight, for your brother. And we just want to give you our condolences and our support. I'm sure he was everybody you are. And just how's your family doing, and how are you holding up through that? And you're certainly doing some amazing things in his honor, it sounds like. It's like I'm getting choked up talking about it. So,
yeah. Well, and thanks for bringing it up. It is, it's a terrible thing, but it's a terrible thing that, you know, unfortunately is a part of life. And, you know, it's not fair. It doesn't make any sense. Still doesn't make any sense. But, you know, I thought about, you know, what I could really do, you know, afterwards. You know, I'm not really things happen in life. Things are hard. And it's kind of like how you stand up. I mean, it's the cliche thing, you know, like what, you know, it's not getting down. It's about how you get up. But that is 100% true. I just thought, you know, if I'm going to, you know, really honor someone that I deeply cared about and loved and respected and, you know, cherished close to my heart, the only thing I can do is just live my life better for myself and, you know, kind of, you know, make those dreams a reality, the dreams that, you know, we talked about together and the things that, you know, he wanted for me. Obviously, you know, younger brother looked up to me, you know, and loved that I was an athlete. It was something that he talked about all the time. He was really one of my biggest fans. The kid, he knew stats and things about myself. He knew everything that was happening. Every interview, he watched everything. And I'm like, you know, like, I gotta make this happen. And, you know, fighting, you know, under those circumstances was so extremely difficult because, you know, I was an absolute mess. You know, it's kind of the first time anything like that had happened to me. And I really, you know, everybody was like, wow, you know, you were so brave and you handled it so well. But the truth is, like, I didn't handle it well. You know, I don't think anybody handles situations like that well. I kind of did what I knew I had to do as a man. And I knew I had to step up and absolutely, you know, do my best and just go out there and be the athlete that I know that I am, you know, because, you know, something that he cared about. And, you know, I know that, you know, something that he would have wanted me to compete. So, you know, that's just what I did. And, you know, I never intended on, you know, being an inspiration for anyone, but I really felt like there were a lot of people that, you know, kind of, you know, cause everybody deals with something like that in their life. And, there were a lot of people that reached out to me and just basically said, you know, like that was very inspiring. Like, well, it was nothing that I intended on being or doing. It was cool to see that, you know, I was able to, you know, impact some people and they were able to, you know, maybe take some strength from that. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I mean, pray to God, I never have to deal with anything like that ever again, but, you know, it's good to know that, you know, in the face of, you know, that kind of adversity that I can, you know, really, I can make something happen.
Yeah, no, well said. And, you know, our best to you and the family and in your brother's memory. Awesome what you're doing to make him proud and stand tall for him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Boy, that's tough. You know, John and I, you know, have gone through some stuff too in our careers and things. So it really hits home when that stuff gets brought up. But everybody needs their heroes, Cody, and you're bearing that hero. Everybody needs someone to look up. Everybody needs someone to inspire to. Like I said, you gave me a proud moment today by telling me about your proud moment. Hopefully we can spread that, the strength that you show, you know, through your brother's death. I mean, that inspires people and that gives them that leg up when people need heroes. I had a Vietnam vet after I got shot in the line of duty, you know, I didn't really want anything to do with it. And he said, Wayne, everybody needs their heroes and you need to stand up and be a hero. And that has affected me to this day. You know, I'm just like, they need their heroes. And anyway, it's kind of funny. We don't think of ourselves as heroes. No hero does, but everybody else needs their heroes and I need my heroes. And today you're my hero, man.
Well, I appreciate that. And it's true. You know, it really does take, you know, it's a weird thing. You know, people find strength in other people, you know, and mm-hmm. whether it's like the hero or whatever it is, you know, if people see, you know, role models, people they look up to doing the right thing and making good decisions, you know, when they could easily make a bad decision, you know, that's super important. And that's the only way you can do anything is by example, you know, and, you know, I try to set, you know, the best example possible for maybe the kids that look up to me and, you know, I want to say that, you know, I'm perfect and I've always been, you know, this outstanding guy, but it took a lot of lumps and a lot of doing the wrong thing before I figured out like, hey, you know, that's not what I want to do. That's not who I want to be. Somebody that, you know, you can, you know, I think about it. Like, somebody said to me once, they were like, if you were a dad, would you want a daughter to date you? And at the time I was,
That's a great litmus test. Great,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and I thought about it for a second and I was like, absolutely not. I'm a wild animal. Like, there's no way. My daughter comes home with a guy that looks like me. I'm like, dude, get out.
Yeah.
Get out. Guns, get out of my house. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, yeah, that's a way to look at it that I never really thought about. I'm like, I want to be the kind of person that, you know, a daughter takes home and dad's like, all right, this guy, he's okay. Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't like the situation, but you know, he's an okay guy, you know? And that was huge because, you know, I have a little sister and I think about, you know, like when she brings a guy home, I'm like, man, if he's like me, I don't want him I don't want him around her. And now I can say that like, he's like me, I think I'd be okay with him, you know? And that's like something you got to look at in yourself. You know, nobody wants to look themselves in the mirror and be honest and really look and be like, am I someone that I would recommend, you know, to a friend for something, you know, and just to kind of live that life where you're really actually out there doing the right things. It's hard, especially, you know, for someone like me, because, you know, like when I was young, I was an absolute wild animal. And now I've kind of found peace in the fact that, you know, I do the right things and I am a role model. I am setting a good example for people. You know, I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't, you know what I mean? I live a simple life and I work hard and I'm, you know, goal driven. And I think that like, that might not be, the coolest thing in the world. Right. I mean, you know, young kids look at you and like, yeah, that guy's not very cool. But, you know, as you get older and you mature, it's like, you know, it is cool to do the right thing. It is cool to be a person, you know, in any walk of life, you know what I mean? Like, no matter what you believe, no matter what, you know, religion, race, whatever, you know, it's always cool to be a good person. You know, nobody likes people that suck. I mean, it doesn't matter what you believe. If you're a decent person, you know, it echoes and everyone knows it. You know, I mean, I have friends that I think about it like, Joe Benavidez. It's just an outstanding dude, just a great guy. And like, literally, like, you know, him and I are great friends, but we have nothing in common. Like, we're not, the thing we have in common, the reason we met is because we're both athletes, both fighters. So we have that in common. But like, outside of that, like, Joe's into like, he's into fashion. He's a big foodie guy. And you know what I mean? I'm kind of like a uncultured, like kind of like a redneck. You know what I mean? Like, I come from the country. I hunt, I fish.
we are out so, the dirt, man. Yeah.
So opposites. You know what I mean? Like, this guy's never been hunting. He's never been camping. He doesn't enjoy
get dirty.
Yeah. He doesn't enjoy the same things I do. I mean, we met because we were, you know, both athletes and we both, you know, worked hard. And so I saw him at the gym all the time. And, but you know, we're friends, we're really good friends because, you know, we kind of have the same like morals and life views. It's like, you know, I'm going to take care of the people I care about. And, you know, I'm going to do the best I can. And I'm going to try to, you know, be a good person to everyone I meet. And like that is so funny because, you know, there's so many people that I've met in fighting, and I'm sure you guys can relate to this too, that like, I never would have met or been friends with, or even given the time of day, just because, you know, they dress differently than me. Their views on life, you know, their life experiences are so different than mine. Like, I can't imagine ever being friends, but then you sit down with them and you're like, yeah, this is, you know, this dude, yeah, complete polar opposite of me. But, you know, we have, you know, so much in common that we both, you know, care about people, and, you know, we both are trying to do the right thing and just do the best we can with the cards we are dealt. And I think if more people kind of, that's something everyone can get behind. You know what I mean? Like, people like good people, and it doesn't matter what you do, what you believe in. You know, if you're just a good person, I think people can relate to you, and it's just wild. It's wild to me. You know, the people I've met and the friends that I have, like, complete, so different, but
oh yeah, yeah,
very much the same.
I mean, just doing this podcast, reaching out, you know, it's National Women's Month, and we just did this pretty cool podcast with Cindy Stite, and she, you know, just to hear her perspective and some of the things I'm doing wrong, Cody, you know, I just, you know, women to me were, you know, not equals, but he cherished, so to speak. And you did, you know, you opened the doors for him and stuff. And when you meet him hunting, you know, you don't expect them to be hunters. And I, you know, it's just changing that and making you a different person because of the influences you are having on your life and from every walk of life. It's just, it's really good. And I got a lot of friends. I even tell my guys when I work for them, have a friend that's outside of law enforcement, because they ground you. They ground you. They, yep. You know, your friends in law enforcement, you think the same way. You eat, you drink, you do all the same things. You take that person who doesn't have a law enforcement career, hang out with them, go have a couple beers with them, do whatever. Go play golf. I'm not a golf player, but go do it. And I've done it. I've done it with those people. Have somebody outside, totally outside, so you get that influence. And that makes you a better person. And every time we have these openings, I try to make myself a better person.
Yeah, and you talk about like a polarizing thing. It's like everybody's on one side of the line, and if
what
you
happened to
have
middle?
Different, yeah, you have different ideologies than me. Well, then we're not friends. We can't,
yeah.
We can't see eye to eye on anything. That's an issue. That's the real issue.
That is the real issue.
It's so divided. You know what I mean? And people aren't open to having the conversation about differences. You know what I mean? Like, you got to understand, like, through the different walks of life, you know, I've learned in my life experience, because I've met so many different people, you know, through MMA and through hunting and fishing and through life, that, like, you know, like the people that I, like I said, never could have never imagined being friends with, never imagined sitting down and having dinner with, and, you know, thoroughly enjoying their company. I'm like, wow, you know, like, I've been so close-minded to so many things for so long that, you know, like, when you really start, like, just accepting, you know, like, yeah, this person has completely different political views than I, but that doesn't mean we're not friends. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
That's okay. It's okay. Yeah. We don't have to see every single thing in our life, and we can still be friends because we share, you know, common ideas, and we, you know, we live our life in a way that is respectful, you know, and that's something that I feel like so many people right now need. They absolutely need it. If we need one thing, it's understanding. It's understanding. It's like, hey, okay, yeah, you think this, I'd like to know why. Like, how they came up with the conclusion of what they believe isn't so how you came up with the conclusion of what you believe. You know what I mean? There's so many things that influence, you know, whether it be where you're from, you know, it's actually kind of crazy that, like, it's all middle ground, and that's how we should see it. You know, instead of being like, oh, you're a Republican. Oh, I can't like you. We can't be friends.
Yeah. Or you can't date them. Or I've heard that before. Yeah, you're a Republican. I can't date you. You know, I can't bring a Republican
home.
Have
you in the family. No.
The podcasts like this break down that, because we're just being people, and we miss that middle ground. And like you said, politics, certainly when those get in, sometimes I avoid them all costs, but if they come across the right way, we can have an open and educated discussion. And yeah, they bring in points that I've never thought about, and we bring in points in there, and then you have a conversation. One thing I think law enforcement has failed, we haven't, and with, you can think of this with MMA too, is outside people don't really understand it. They don't understand when you can deploy a taser, when you take out your baton. We've done a lousy job of educating our public on when we can protect ourselves and others. And I think that we need to do that, because when close friends of mine, and I'm going to put this right on my shoulders, close friends of mine say, geez, he just used a taser. You know, was that fair that he got shot and killed? And then I have to explain what a taser does. It incapacitates you. That's a life-threatening weapon. And I thought to myself, geez, I haven't done a good job with my very close friend in teaching him about law enforcement and how we have to deal with it. And that's on me. That's a close friend that asked me that question, which I always assume people came to know, but I guess they don't. And, you know, I guess I got to have that conversation is when police can use force and how much they can use and when. Because the cops hate bad cops. We don't like bad cops. Like you said, that egg thing, you mix them all in, or the bad fighter, the same thing. And I'm sure people don't understand MMA fighting too. They're, when you say you're a fighter for the UFC, I'm sure they're like, I could see people going, oh.
This guy will never be a friend.
Scary.
Yeah. People are like, yeah, that's cool. The other 50 are like, whoa. I've heard about you guys. I know what you guys are up to. Like, I don't want to do with you. It's like, well, I think if you got to know me, I'm not such a bad guy. You don't want to get me, but I don't really
you got to see that reaction on people's face, though, that have never met you and introduced you. You got to see that look, that like, wow.
It's always funny because actually I'm buying a house in Vegas right now, and I'm with my realtor, and it's the first time we'd met, and, you know, we're just having a conversation, and he asked me, we're looking at a house, and he asked me what I do, and I turned to him real fast, like real fast movement. And I was like, I fight in the UFC. And he kind of jumped back. <He's> like, I was like, I'm just messing with you, dude. I never would have guessed like that's what you did. And I was like, well, I hope not. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't want to come across as a guy that's like, you know, wants to kick everybody's ass all the time, because that's absolutely not me. But it is actually hilarious to see people's reaction to that. And, you know, some people, like I said, some people think it's cool. Other people are like, oh, my gosh.
The light fighters are the most active fighters. They're the ferocious fighters. Those are the fights I always want to see. It's just so much action, and you're in it.
Yeah, and it's so weird because, you know, you see these people that are absolutely just animals in the cage. You know what I mean? And they're, you put them in that cage, and they're like you said, ferocious. They are vicious. And then you see them outside of the cage, and someone that comes to mind is Justin Gaethje. I'm sure you guys know who that is.
Yeah,
Justin is like one of the guys that, like, you lock him in that cage, like, it's kill or be killed for Justin. Like, he is going out on his shield every time, and that he embodies everything that it is to be a fighter. And then you talk to him outside of fighting, and there's absolutely no, he's got glasses on, and he's dressed like a normal guy. He doesn't look like a fighter. You talk to him, and you're just like, this is the same guy.
I just saw last night.
He almost decapitates someone, and he is just the nicest guy, and most, you know, soft-spoken guy, you know, you would have no inclination at all just by knowing him outside of the ring that he is that, like, ferocious competitor that he is. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. And yeah, that more people should get to know, you know, athletes and law enforcement people on a personal level. And then they could be like, yeah, like, these are good people. They're just nice people. They're just like me, you know. They're not at all what I expected. And that's, you know, always a nice thing. Like, I don't want people to, you know that, you know, I'm a MMA fighter. I feel like I'm not being a very decent person if your first impression of me is like, yeah, that guy's for sure a fighter. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just a normal guy, and this is just what I do for a living. Like, yeah, I mean, fighting is kind of who I am, but it's not who I am. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, there's a little bit of a fighter in all of us. And, you know, the trick is to, you know, be able to, separate the two, you know, and that's not something that we get praised for.
Yeah, being real warriors, being true professionals, you know, being stewards of humanity out there through your profession. And it almost seems oxymoronic, but that's exactly what you guys personify. You know, just like our first responders, man, you guys are true warriors, true professionals, great role models. You're promoting a good message, and you can protect as much as you can professionally fight, you know. And that's a beautiful thing to see. It really is. Cody, so, man, you got a fight coming up. And is there anything you want to talk about on that fight before we close out, or anybody you want to talk about or thank, or give us a little bit there?
So, I mean, this fight has been in the works. It's been in the works. We were supposed to fight in December. I hurt my back, tried to push it back a couple of weeks, didn't work out. So we rescheduled it for March, and then he gets COVID.
Oh,
I get placements, and, one of them gets COVID, and the next guy, you know, had like a heart condition. And so I don't end up fighting in March. And so we rescheduled for May. So this is something I've been preparing for, geez, 6-7 months now. It's been a long road just to get in the cage, and COVID makes everything so difficult right now. Just because, you know, so many people are getting false positives and all these things, you know, there's so many more obstacles that we all have to, you know, overcome now just for the opportunity to compete. I'm just excited, man. I'm excited to do it. I've been training for so long. It's, you know, I kind of got blue balls, so to speak, after the,
yes,
I'm in the gates. I'm ready to go. You know, I'm mentally, physically ready to go. And then it gets yanked out from underneath me. So now at this point, I'm just itching for that time. I mean, I'm doing everything I can to, you know, occupy my time and get ready, but you know, I'm ready right now, you know, and I'm just counting the days until I get the opportunity to go and compete. And the guy I'm fighting is a pretty serious competitor. He's from Georgia. He's, you know, probably the best guy in that country. And he's a, you know, great wrestler, great fighter. He's going to be a handful, but man, I'm really looking forward to kicking his butt.
We're excited for you. We're going to be pulling for you. We're definitely going to be watching it. Hopefully I'll even be there if everything times out, but man, this is super exciting. Super exciting to see it develop and we'll be pulling for you, man. And Godspeed and stay safe. I know there's some training going on before that. And, be careful on those hunting adventures. No injuries before the fight, right? Going doing an Ironman hunt or something out there in Nevada. But it has been an absolute honor and pleasure having you on, man, and getting to meet you firsthand and share all of this. And thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you guys. I'm grateful to be here. It's a good conversation. Good conversation. I think we talked about a lot of good stuff, and I hope something can come from it. You know.